Leota Tavares bunts one right back to Steele. A backhanded throw to first in time to get Tavares. Two away, but Steele on the ground. Did he hurt his leg? He's holding the back of his left leg around the knee hamstring area. And racing out to take a look at him is trainer Nick Frangella. Right now, Steele is walking alongside trainer Nick Frangella and manager Craig Counsell. And he's going to leave the game. He's headed back to the Cubs dugout along the third baseline. So the Cubs are going to be forced to make a pitching change as Steele leaves with an injury. He's walking under his own power, but Coom, he's clearly limping with that left leg bothering him.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And all we know is that there's an MRI today and an IL stint is likely, according to Craig Counsell in the postgame.
So. Yeah, and Justin Steele also spoke to it and wanted to downplay it, but it certainly is going to be something that tests their depth immediately. You wonder what the corresponding move will be. Hayden Wesneski could be the most likely guy to come back up, you would think, because of his experience. But this is a new season, and it's a new era of decision-making because I think Craig Counsell will be involved in this. I don't know what he feels about, how he feels about Hayden Wesneski. We don't know how he feels about having 4.5 starters now if you have – a five-man rotation, and what is he looking for in that fifth role if it's Drew Smyly and the opener is always an option? Not sure, Molly, because I think that we're going to learn a lot about Craig Counsell. I think there may be an overstating the fact how unconventional he can be at times. I think there's going to be stuff mostly by the book, but I don't want to pretend to think, what? Well, this is exactly what he's going to do is just plug in one starter for another. Maybe he'll go a different route. Maybe he'll be a different guy.
Why did he leave Smyly in yesterday? Did that bother you at all? In the 10th inning, Smyly has the 10th, gets the left-handed batter. The runner moves to third, and then the base is loaded. He faced everyone. Why leave him in?
I wondered if that was about – just what other option would you have? What it would be a better option? You trust him in that situation. First game of the season, let's see what we've got. A lot of different factors. It didn't bother me necessarily at the time. I wasn't triggered by many of the moves. I know Kevin said this was a manager's loss. A lot of other people might agree. I didn't view it that way. I viewed this as a closer loss. And I think Adbert Alzolay is somebody that you're going to trust and certainly earned your trust last season.
Yeah,
but last night he didn't have it, and it's a good team, and tipped their cap to the Rangers. They had their ceremony. They got another ring ceremony on Saturday. It's pomp and circumstance down in Texas. The Cubs are having to watch this, but I don't know. There wasn't one or two moves that I looked at that. I was surprised at Morel DHing and Madrigal at third, but I felt like I understood why you wanted to give the nod to defense. And I thought that was something we're probably going to have to get used to.
312-644-6767. Phil is in McHenry. Hey, Phil.
Hey, how you doing? I know I've been sitting here listening to you guys, and I'm a big Cub fan. How you doing there, Dave?
Good.
I got to tell you, first off, Wesneski, I don't know why he's even on this team. You bring him up, you might as well scratch off 4 or 5 more losses. I'm sorry to say, I don't know why they just don't get this thing going and throw Benny Brown in there and see what they can do. That's all I'm going to say about that. But as far as Alzolay is a guy that you don't know what you're going to get on any given day. It reminds me of that play. You remember last year during the break when Talkman made that big catch out in St. Louis and they showed that?
Yes.
On Marquee. Could you imagine if he didn't catch that ball? Again, that would have been a home run that St. Louis would have won. And who knows if Jed Hoyer would have decided to be a buyer at that point, because that's when he started to be a buyer and start doing things, for that season. But my point is that Alzolay, they need to go out and spend some money. I don't know why he cuts corners. I don't get it. I don't know. And in 2016, you remember in 2016 how, if it wasn't for Chapman, they went out and made that deal. They gave up a bunch of people for Chapman, which is smart. They had to do it. But without that move, they don't win. My point is going to be, are we going to wait now until they're going to see what the Cubs are going to do? Are they going to be contending? Or, it's really frustrating. I just wish they would get these things in order prior to the season beginning, you know?
Phil, I understand the frustration. It is one game in and your closer blew a save. And so now you want, and I understand that the reaction is, where's a better closer? The Cubs would probably be in the market for a high leverage relief pitcher at the deadline, like every other contender will be, right, Molly? I think that's what you do at the deadline. Patrick Mooney had an interesting item in The Athletic yesterday before the opener. He predicted that the Cubs, they had to make one bold prediction per team. Patrick Mooney said the Cubs will trade for Kenley Jansen at the deadline. Also Shane Bieber, but Kenley Jansen to address the closing issues. And I think that would be great. You'd find always room for a high leverage power arm in the bullpen.
I think the feeling that the Cubs lost the game is born of the fact that they led 1-0, then they were tied, then they led 2-1, then they were tied, then they led 3-2. It felt like, you know, Texas was coming back mm-hmm. all night, including against Alzolay with the home run. And then you end up, you know, as you say, you got the bases loaded and Morel is up and you're looking at the foul line and you're like, this is going to be it. And
it was almost dead.
He had a couple of hits and then you end up losing in the bottom of the 10th. So I just think, you know, that's their first lead of the night when they finally won the game and mm-hmm. walked it off. And I think that as a result, it's hard not to come out of that game feeling like, damn, you know, close to this, close to that, close again.
You do.
And then you lose.
It's frustrating, but there's nothing that happened in the game. There's no decision that
right.
was made by the manager that I think outweighs the concern for Justin Steele right now.
Oh, that's the only.
That was the biggest
only thing,
story.
That was the biggest story of the game. Is that your opening day starter goes down with a hamstring.
And what do you do now? Now, Wisniewski, as you hear from Phil, not a lot of confidence maybe among some members of the fan base. I think if you look at Ben Brown, is he ready yet? Certainly he's more confident than anybody they may have in the Iowa. And he may be ready stuff-wise, but do you want to put him on a shuttle back and forth to Des Moines if, say, Justin Steele is only out for 15 days? I think it'll be closer to 4 weeks than two, perhaps. But
oh, really? Okay.
Don't you think it'd be...
I mean, I honestly think 4-6.
Okay.
Or 6-8.
That's a long time for a hamstring strain.
That didn't look like a strain.
You think it's going to find out it's a pulled hamstring?
That's my fear.
Yeah, that is a fear.
The MRI today, here's what I know. That looked bad.
It did.
I'm just saying from... You know, as you sat there watching it, it was like a rut row. I mean, that guy is grabbing it.
He knew right away.
He knew right away. It looked like it's gone. I don't know if you've ever heard a hamstring.
Oh, yeah.
That's an awful injury.
It is.
And when you know when you got a hamstring injury.
We're going to talk to Dr. Shane Noe from Rush, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush at 7:45 to tell us, give an idea what to expect, what we could be looking at, and how difficult this could be for Justin Steele to come back. And then not only come back, Molly, but he was pitching at a high level last night.
Oh, he was pitching great.
He's their ace.
He is their ace.
Can he reasonably expect to just come back if he is healed from his hamstring injury and just go back to form?
We got to find out, like, you know, just generally speaking, what are the levels of hamstring injury? What's the ideal injury, for lack of a better term? If you're gonna strain a hamstring, what's the best strain in terms of return? And then how do the degrees of the hamstring injury, which represent the amount of tear in the thing, what are the different kind of options for that? And again, I've had a hamstring. And I know people who've suffered them, they linger for a long time.
That's the biggest problem.
And the problem is, like, you know, they can be like a chronic issue if you don't take care of it.
We talk about Nick Madrigal. You know, he started at third base last night. He has had a chronic hamstring problem for years.
Right.
Seasons. And so that goes into one to the next. Not suggesting that certainly for the Cubs ace and Justin Steele, but it did not look good.
No, it didn't look good.
And it's going to linger. And who would have thought, Molly, who would have thought yesterday, as we got ready for opening day in Chicago and around baseball, that Garrett Crochet would go longer and deeper into the game than Justin Steele.
Oh, God. That's so wild. Yeah, I would never have imagined that. I wouldn't have. I would never have imagined it. But I thought Justin Steele, I thought he played great, and I thought that that he looked like – I thought Crochet looked like an opening day starter.
He looked
and that
like,
surprised me because I didn't think of him that way.
He looked like their ace. He looked like an ace. He had electric stuff, yep. And that's a very – that's a pretty good Tiger team that came into Chicago and is still here.
Yeah, well, they're young.
Yeah, they're on the rise.
And they're despised. But I think that, like, the Cubs played the World Series champion, right? They got the trophy last year. They got a great manager. They got a really good team. They're without their best pitchers, but all those guys are lined up and ready to land before the season is over. So that's what makes them so dangerous. But when you're playing a team that good, you know, you got to take advantage of the chances you have.
Yeah.
And I think that's the frustration
they
that
squandered
we heard from
a chance to
Kevin
to beat.
And whomever.
Yeah. And I get it because now
it's the first game.
It's also pretty frustrating if you're a Cub fan and you're expecting this team to win the division as the favorite. And I think those are reasonable labels to attach to this team. But now you're two starters down.
Wow.
Some people might say it's your two best starters potentially. If Jameson Taillon is paid to be your number two starter, Justin Steele is clearly the ace.
Neither guy is Max Scherzer.
Neither guy is Max Scherzer, no.
Did you see him yesterday?
Yeah, I did see him.
Tony is in Wisconsin. Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
We lived the dream.
Yeah. I think you guys are going to have days when you love Craig and hate Craig. I don't think he did anything to you guys yesterday, but there's going to be days when you look at a lineup and you go, what is he thinking? Great manager, but he overthinks a lot of things. And if you guys do make it to the playoffs, he'll put people on your roster. You're going to be like, why did he leave that dude off the roster and put Jesse Winker on, who had 6 at-bats this year? Because he's good in the playoffs. You know, like, things like that. So, but it's going to be fun battling against you guys this year, and you may not think we have much, but we'll bring it.
Are you on the team? How did you feel when they traded Corbin Burns, and what did you think of his performance?
And how are you going to feel next year when the Cubs sign him?
I think watch on Saturday what this DL Hall kid can do. So
okay.
So I think this DL Hall kid is going to be a stud.
Can't wait. A lot of suspense.
Thanks, Tony.
For that one. A lot of suspense.
I can't wait until you play the Cubs.
You got to work on the pronouns here.
You got to work on the personal pronouns.
Yeah, I got to work on the pronouns. That's important.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
That's
the one thing. I think that Craig Counsell, I hope that Cub fans are in a position to be rankled by a decision that Craig Counsell makes about the playoff roster. That would mean one thing. They're in the playoffs in season one.
I'm feeling good about my Orioles pick after one game.
You guys, you Orioles, you going to say we?
We did very well.
You did?
With the ace from Milwaukee.
Hey,
striking out 11.
Lights out, he was.
He was good.
Good for them.
Here's a guy checking in. You guys sucking the nipple of the White Sox. What? Crochet faced a mediocre Tiger team. Now you're calling him an ace after one start. LOL.
Okay.
If you had ears, sir, and you could remove your head wherever it is currently inserted and clean them out, you would hear that we said, he looked like an opening day starter.
Like an ace.
Yes.
Like an ace.
Yes.
And okay.
No one is making predictions about his future based on one performance.
If you'd like to break this
his
down.
His first ever performance.
Tiger fan.
Ninth player in the history of baseball to have his first performance on opening day.
Yes.
He made
history.
A good one.
He made history. And the other thing is that when you're talking about the White Sox, a team that a lot of people have ticketed for 100 losses, to call Garrett Crochet the ace of this staff is faint praise.
Oh, yes.
We're damning him with faint praise.
That's exactly
but
right.
But that's not technically wrong because he is probably, the way that he pitched yesterday,
he was very good.
The ace of this staff.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Again, he totally looked the part. For one start, and I think what we're
who else would it be?
What we're talking about is how we had discussed yesterday 3 2/3 innings, 4 innings, 4 2/3. No one was saying, well, the guy's going to go six and give you a quality start.
He threw 87 pitches.
It was a really good performance for a guy that had never started a game before in Major League Baseball. I think in 2019 or something, he may have started in college, but that doesn't necessarily count.
Doesn't count. This isn't the SEC.
Holy cow.
It's the AL Central. The White Sox made the wrong kind of history, according to our guy Jay Cuda, who pointed this out. Sox became the second team in baseball history to have 0 runs, 0 walks, 0 extra base hits, and 10-plus strikeouts on opening day. The only other time it happened, Giants facing Bob Gibson, opening day 1967.
The White Sox, I looked it up yesterday. The White Sox were shut out 13 times last year en route to 101 losses. They've played one game, and they've been shut out. I think 3 of those shutouts came against Detroit, believe it or not. I would have to go back and double-check that, but I'm pretty sure I noticed a trend against the Tigers. But to lose at home against a division rival and to have wasted a really good starting performance – and to fail to score a run does not bode well for the 2024 version of the Chicago White Sox, favored to win 61.5 games by the Fine Four.
Favored to win? That's not, favored to win 61.5 games.
Favored to lose over 100
exactly.
games.
That's the other way to look at it.
Yeah.
I think I'd like the other way. It's more optimistic.
Don't, the other way is than the favored to win?
Well, I think the winning
favored to lose?
It's hard. They could have a good season in terms of improvement.
Yes.
As I said, I picked them to win 68. That means they improved 7 games from last year and still lose 94.
That's a lot of games to lose.
Crowd size yesterday, 33,000 announced.
33,400 announced.
Yeah, late arriving perhaps.
As I said, there'd be a lot of people walking in.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
They ended
is that
up
a little
having
inflated?
Perhaps. Probably
a little.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, did they inflate it by?
It's okay.
8,000. Is that what you're saying?
No,
you thought there'd be 25.
I thought about 25-ish. Yeah.
But if you looked at the crowd, it was a late arriving crowd. You know,
yeah,
there are
nice
people
day.
That can't get to the ballpark at 3 o'clock on a Thursday.
Right.
So it seemed like I was pleasantly surprised by the number of people who showed up on opening day. Now, I'll be very curious to see what happens this weekend. They're playing at 1 o'clock on Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday, what time does that start? It'll be interesting.
It'll be on Saturday, Michael Soroka versus Kenton Maeda. And then Sunday is Eric Fetty against Jack Flaherty. Tigers have some decent starters. Tigers have...
In your voice, I heard you saying that the Sox are in trouble.
Sox might be in trouble.
Okay.
They got 3 hits yesterday.
I gotcha. But I mean, I think that I'm curious to see the guys who are pitching. I'm very curious to see what Soroka looks like after he had a really good year in 2019 and then got hurt for a couple years and he's had to change some things. I'm just curious.
A lot of unfamiliar faces.
Fetty,
I have to say that.
Not
having been to spring training, being out in the clubhouse yesterday before the game, looking at the
you
name
didn't
plates.
Recognize anyone?
Didn't recognize anybody.
Is that Ozzie Guillen?
But thank God Ozzie was there. Yeah. Ron Kittle was there. Harold Baines was there. It was cool to see some of these guys.
Gordon Beckham
making the rounds.
Know him well.
Yeah,
Chuck. We know Chuck.
Obviously Chuck. Yeah. Ozzie throwing out the first pitch. Nice touch.
Oh, that was sweet. His grandson.
Yeah. Ozzie being there. But Ozzie being at the center of everything.
I agree.
This is Mr. White Sox right now. So.
Sure.
A lot of fun.
He did a great job on the pre and post. Although I didn't get to watch the post because there was too many other sporting events going on, frankly. I was rushing around trying to watch everything. And oftentimes that leads to you creating gaps in your knowledge of what actually happened because you were too busy watching.
Busy day. Yeah. I mean, it was a busy, busy sports day. A lot of things happened in Major League Baseball that were interesting.
Yep. All right. 312-644-6767. Great to see opening day. Great. Even though both our teams lost by a run, at least the Cubs scored some. Mully and Haw on the score.
Yeah, it's I've been in the big moment before. Nothing obviously as great as this, but it was nice to, you know, just give my team a fighting chance. And I felt like as long as I was doing that, I was able to keep my emotions under control.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. That is the aforementioned Garrett Crochet. White Sox ace. A Cy Young contender.
Easy now.
Oh, sorry.
White Sox ace, yes. Cy Young contender, not yet. Not likely. But the ace of a team that's likely to lose 100 games or 95 mm-hmm. games, yeah, that's a...
Dylan who?
What? Hey. Will you cease that stuff?
Oh, there you go. Nice. Cease and desist. Yeah, we were accused of being too kindly toward Garrett Crochet.
Did not expect him to go 87 pitches. Did not expect him to go into the sixth. 73 innings total over the three previous seasons in the bullpen. First start since college. It was reasonable. I know they pushed back, and I wonder what role that played in keeping him in. They pushed back a little bit from Chris Getz to Crochet the day before the start. But is this going to be the new normal? And if it is, great. I do wonder, Molly, I mean, this could be somebody who has a stronger year, and maybe the expectations can change if he's going to be one of these guys that can go five or six. He won't be just an opener, as you alluded to him, regularly enough to annoy him.
Oh, boy. I mean, I was wrong. I said I was wrong. They announced him as the opening day starter, and I said opener day starter because I honestly didn't think the guy – he was a relief pitcher. We'd never seen him start. And his first start comes in the season opener and on opening day.
He was impressive.
So he pitched great.
He didn't hit 199.8, pretty close. Slider was moving. Even on the run, the singular run of the game, yes. Javi Baez down 0-2.
Then 0-2.
They throw him a fastball.
I know.
And
he's Javi.
He singles to right field.
He gets a single.
It's not
seeing eye single.
Yes.
And then he moves to
steal second.
Maldonado has a hard time with the pitch, bounces it up.
Is it his fault?
Was it Maldonado's fault?
I don't know
whose fault it was.
I don't know. Then the ground out gets him to third.
He
scores on a sac fly.
And then he, exactly right.
Move him over. Move him in.
It wasn't like they were killing him. He scattered five hits on the day.
Scattered.
And the most impressive statistic, the one that was the key to his outing, was zero walks. So we know he can strike people out. We know that he's pitching. He's a very high velocity lefty. So he strikes out eight guys and zero walks.
That was great.
Control,
dominance, and that's what you want from Garrett Crochet. Now, I'll give you a big White Sox prize. Maybe I'll buy you one of those fancy shakes if you can name the two relievers that preceded Michael Kopech for the White Sox.
Yeah, I do not want a – no, I want to finish my thought.
Okay.
I don't want one of those shakes.
No, all right.
If you promise not to give me toasted marshmallows, I'll answer the question.
How about one of those big fat burgers or whatever you want? If you can name the two relievers without looking –
I'm not allowed to look.
No, you're not allowed to look.
What kind of garbage is this?
See, Devi Garcia.
I'm trying to remember. Oh, Devi Garcia came in. Yes, that's right.
And Dominic Leone.
And then it was time for Dommy Leone.
Dommy?
I don't know.
You give him a nickname already? I thought I was the nickname guy.
You're the nickname guy. I just was.
Then they gave way for Kopech. And Kopech comes in and did what he's going to do.
That was wild.
Bases loaded, two out jam. Yeah. Michael Kopech pitched out of it. He pitched into it as well.
He pitched into it, then he pitched out of it. It wasn't that Kopech, it wasn't that he came into the game or anything. It's just that when we talked about him, you were desperate to make him the closer. And I was kind of like, if you put him in a high leverage situation, he's just going to walk the bases loaded or hit a guy. That's what I said. So he did hit a guy.
He did hit a guy.
He did give up a hit.
Yes, he did.
And he did walk a guy
trifecta
to load the bases.
If you had that in your parlay,
that's it.
That's the same game parlay.
But then he struck a guy out.
Yeah,
and he got out of it.
That is a Michael Kopech.
That is Michael Kopech.
Full experience.
Yes.
Get used to it. Buckle up, as he said. His stuff was moving, moving. Not even he knew where it would land.
So if Brandon is telling us that he believes that the White Sox have found a guy in Garrett Crochet that you can go out and watch because he's entertaining.
He is definitely that guy.
I think they found a reliever in Michael Kopech, who is also twists and turns.
I hope you're
and
right.
Stops and
but
starts.
But I don't know that I put those two in the same category.
He's gonna let six guys get on base and somehow strike out the side and not give up a run. That's what it feels like.
Carnival.
They're
trick.
Gonna have to throw out two guys somehow. When he comes in,
my confidence level in Garrett Crochet.
Maybe if you had Juan Soto throwing the ball home.
My confidence level in Garrett Crochet as a starter is greater than my confidence level in Michael Kopech as a reliever. And that's not exactly a bold statement.
It's not.
But they would like both of those guys, I think, to carve those niches this year where Garrett Crochet is a top of the rotation guy and Michael Kopech is a high leverage reliever they can trust.
Yeah.
I hope that he does do that. I'm skeptical because of the lack of command. Had a good moment before the game. You know, Bruce has been out there.
Yes.
He's a staple, and he has a great relationship with these guys.
Yes.
And so Bruce and I went over after some of the players had broken up, and Michael Kopech was at his clubhouse. And just you can tell he's such an earnest young man, and he's such a committed athlete. You hope that he could figure these things out. I don't know anybody who's ever had an exchange with Michael Kopech that comes away thinking it was a bad one. He's an easy guy to pull for. You have a moment with him and you leave the clubhouse thinking, I hope that things go well for him today.
You need to stop talking to him.
You think it was me? Oh, that's great. That's what you get out of that. Have a moment with Kopech before the game and now it's my fault. I'm blaming Bruce.
You and Bruce need to leave that guy alone.
Okay. Well, we tried.
Oh, my God.
Is it your exchanges that make him look so stressed on the mound?
You think?
Like, I'm not a body language expert, but wow.
He does have a lot of that.
Just watching it, you have anxiety for him.
That's interesting. So you watch Michael Kopech and you think that he is more demonstrative than many relievers?
Not demonstrative, clearly, his confidence has been shaken over his career, and he is fighting very hard to get it back.
I think it's accurate.
Can I tell you one here that we have a texter checking in about? And I laugh at this idea. Here's a great stat from Jake Berger. Jake Berger became the third player in Marlins history to record at least three hits while driving in at least three runs. Sox can't score a run. Guy says there's an over-under of 15 and a half games for Mankata to reach third base. And Jake Berger drove in three runs.
That trade's not going to age well. That's not going to age well at all. Did Tim Anderson get any hits? I didn't see what the Marlins box score.
No.
Interesting that
he didn't have to.
The Marlins have, that
Jake took care of
the left side of the White Sox 2022 infield.
I didn't know that because there were too many sports things for me to worry about coming in this morning. I didn't look up Jake, but thank you for giving me that little nugget. Because say what you want about Jake, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, but when they traded him, given the fact that nobody knew who to talk to and the wrong guy was making the deal, that's kind of what happened with Rick and Kenny, right?
Yeah, that was probably the last straw.
Turning point.
That was a point of no return because it seemed as if that was a trade that maybe Rick Hahn didn't want to make. Kenny Williams did. I'm not quite sure. That was the last significant front office move before both were fired. And that was a different vibe yesterday. You know, not only were there 14 new players around the clubhouse wearing name tags or jerseys. I mean, it's like, really, who are these guys? But
hey, Chris, turn around for a second. I just want to see your name.
Chris Getz was making the rounds with a lot of the new front office personnel. And there was a notable absence, significant by their absence, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams. First time in a very long time the White Sox had opening day at 35th and Shields, and neither one of those two were there.
All right. 312-644-6767 is the number. John is in Logan Square. Hey, John.
Yeah, hey, guys. Is this a Bears Monday? I feel like Cubs fans are already overreacting about lineups and bullpens. Steel pitch five innings. They had to get taken out in the middle of the game. What do people expect? They had to make a move on the fly. Not to mention, they blew the lead three times. They should have won that game. They were killing Evaldi. They were hitting the ball over 100 miles per hour every other at bat. People need to chill out. It was one game. They look great out there. They're hustling. They play great fundamentals. They're also playing the World Series champs. They're going to be fine.
Thanks, John.
I like it. John maintaining his
it's a long season.
His
reason,
if you will. Yeah. While everyone else, all the minds around him are,
you know, I like what John had to say, and he's exactly right, and yep. I echo all of the things that he said, but I don't have a problem with the white-hot intensity that Kevin brings to every game, or Cubs fans bring to every game. You know what that means? That means the expectations are where they should be for a team like that. It's fascinating to me this morning. White Sox, 1-0. Crochet looks like a top-of-the-rotation starter, and there seems about a positive vibe. The Cubs lose to the World Series champions after they celebrate and they hit a home run. They come back.
In extra innings.
The season's over.
Yeah,
season's over.
No, I don't think. See, now you're reacting like some guy in L.A. You're just overreacting to a couple of people. I don't think you let everyone get to you like that.
Oh, stop it!
You heard me. We're going to bring in
Dr. Shane.
Yes. To talk a little hamstring. We'll try to figure out. We'll just give you a rough idea of what the Cubs are staring down with Justin Steele. Obviously, he's not examining him. We're just going to talk, generally speaking, about this injury. It's Mully and Haw. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Yeah, I was fielding the bunt or whatever, and when I was leaning over, backhanding the ball, I just kind of felt something grab. So, just kind of went down with it and then didn't want to do anything to, risk further injury, but we'll get some imaging done tomorrow and find out just, the severity of it and stuff.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Now joining us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline is Dr. Shane Noe, and we should tell you to download the Circa Sports app today. And Dr. Noe is an orthopedic surgeon, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. And he's going to help us understand hamstring injuries. Dr. No, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate being on.
Well, we appreciate getting a chance to talk about this. And, hamstring injuries all the time in sports, every sport. I'm just curious, in a general sense, can you explain to us, what the different levels of hamstring are, what the grades are of a hamstring injury?
Sure. So the hamstring is the largest muscle in the back of the leg. It connects basically the pelvis to a knee. It's a unique muscle because it spans two joints, both the hip and the knee. And so it is involved in a lot of activities that involve explosiveness. So we see a lot in like pitchers and runners and, contact athletes, baseball players, and soccer. Like you hear about hamstring injuries all the time. They're ubiquitous in sports. So going back to your original question, the types of hamstring injury, there's basically a grading system. We call it grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. Grade 1 is really just kind of a pull of the hamstring muscle itself. They're pretty mild injuries. Grade 2 are a partial tear in the muscles themselves, and a grade 3 is a complete tear in the muscle. And so the ability to diagnose or decide what grading it is really getting an MRI.
And what would they be looking for with the imaging that they plan to get today? And when they look at whatever they see, can you talk about a range of how long he'll miss? Because obviously we're talking about the ace of the Cubs staff. So there's a difference between, okay, this is just something he's going to spend 15 days on the injured list and come back, but more likely it will be longer. Everybody is curious about how long.
Yeah, so the things that they would be looking for on the MRI, one, they want to see if there's any tears in the muscles themselves. Based on the location of the injury, it looked like when he had initially had it, he was kind of feeling the back of his leg, and it was closer to the knee. And so that makes me think that it's probably occurring at that muscle-tendon junction, but not necessarily the tendon itself. But what they want to see is how much of the muscle is torn, if it is. So if it is torn, is it less than 50% or greater than 50%? Or if it is it just like a pull without any disruption or tear of the muscle itself? They'll also look to see if there's any fluid, any hematoma on the MRI that might suggest that there could be a more significant injury pattern or tearing. And then clinically, the training staff and the medical staff will see if there's any swelling on the surface, as well as any bruising on the surface. And so all those things kind of, you know, paint the clinical picture as far as like how bad this tear is. And then did you ask about like how long the recovery might be?
Yeah, the range. Mm-hmm.
Per grade.
So grade ones, usually we're thinking about a couple of weeks or so, 2 to 4 weeks, something in that range. Grade two, I would say probably something in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 weeks. And grade three, we typically think about 6 weeks and longer. It could be 6 to 12 weeks. Sometimes it could be longer than that. So I think we're hoping that it's going to be a lower severity grading on that. But there are also some hamstring injuries that once in a while require surgery. And I think the good news is, based on the location of where he was feeling, obviously not looking at the MRI, that it doesn't look like one that is likely going to need any kind of surgery.
Oh, that's interesting. He's Dr. Shane No, orthopedic surgeon, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. I'm curious, when you're talking pitching, you know, there are different actions with different athletes, whatever they're doing. This is a left-handed pitcher, so I'm thinking of the motion, and this is his left leg. Does that make it more or less complicated in terms of recovery time?
Generally, I mean, obviously both legs are involved with pitching. Yep. It's a total body movement, you know, going from fingertip to toes. I think generally speaking, the opposite leg carries a little bit more weight and weight transfer. But obviously the same side is also at risk too. So one of the things that we see is that, you know, a lot of times the hamstring, if you've had previous injuries to the hamstring, you're more prone to future injuries. Sometimes it could be because of an imbalance between, let's say, some people believe that if your quad is too strong and your hamstrings are weak, that might make the hamstring more prone to injury. It's one of those muscle tendon units that's really tight, just kind of getting it loosened up and stretched and warm and so forth is obviously really important, because otherwise it's more prone to injury as well.
Dr. No, really appreciate this insight. So you have worked with professional athletes, so maybe you could address this. A lot of times you see a hamstring problem crop up and become chronic for certain athletes. You talk about the Cubs, Nick Madrigal's dealt with one for several seasons. Just wonder, is this something that could linger and affect Justin Steele for the rest of this season?
It could in some cases. I mean, I think the ones that we see like kind of recur like year to year to year to year. So if he hasn't had any prior hamstring issues, I wouldn't necessarily conclude that this is going to be one that will linger from here on out. I think, as I stated previously, like, you know, if you've had one hamstring injury or problem, then you are kind of unfortunately more prone to like future ones. So I think it kind of remains to be seen, number one, how severe it is. If it's a lower grade tear, then I would be very optimistic about it.
So we'll let you go. I'm just very curious, because we're talking about professional athletes, and they're going to have all their training staff and everybody working on it. When do, like, if I, as a normal human, were to stretch out the hammy and find that my hamstring, I think something's gone wrong. How often do you deal with, is it only like really severe hamstring injuries that people come in with? Are most weekend warriors just going to try to keep stretching it and keep pushing it?
We're all prone to hamstring injuries. You know, I think professional athletes and weekend warriors alike. So having, you know, a good kind of fitness regimen, you know, making sure that you're well balanced. Obviously, stretching is really important, you know, maintaining activity. You know, I think the thing that we see sometimes is, you know, kind of a too quick of a ramp up in terms of your activities, not doing anything for a while and just kind of jumping into it. That could be a problem. The biggest hamstring injuries that we see actually in the summertime is from water skiing. And so those are ones that like are acute traumatic, you know, and those are pretty unforgettable. But those are the ones that are more higher towards the hip that have, you know, more problems with those.
Great stuff, Dr. Null. Thank you so much. Totally appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mike, David. Appreciate you having me on.
That's Dr. Shane Noe, orthopedic surgeon, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush. That's great.
Good information, especially the before we go any further, like grade one, grade two, grade three.
Yes.
2 to 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks or longer.
Right.
So when you hear today, if they announce whether it's grade one, two, or three, gives you some context there to expect how long you might be missing Justin Steele.
Yeah. They'll know. I mean, I don't know that they're going to announce it, but I think they will know.
They might. I mean, it depends, but the severity, they might want
to. They'll be able to look at an MRI and figure out what that is.
Right.
I don't
so.
Know that they want to announce it.
Probably not, although they've been pretty transparent with things like this, and you're going to know eventually.
But it's interesting, we have a texter who's checked in talking about how he got on skis behind a boat and blew out a hamstring.
Ouch.
That's the bad one, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad one. We just typically get over our skis on this show.
There we go. Yeah. And you know, you can make sure you're stretching because you can pull a hammy bowling.
I was stretching before the show.
You were.
I was stretching in here.
That's because you were described as energetic.
Alex Kuhn said we had a lot of energy, so I just went into stretch mode.
We always have energy.
Doing some calisthenic. Yeah, but
apparently
today
not.
It's like extra hard.
Well, today,
every game
because
going
we
to
didn't
like
sleep,
1
we had to,
a.m.,
we
yeah.
Had to, yeah.
I was with you guys. I had to stay up to watch them, too.
Oh, I know you did.
Now,
I know, it's
now
hard.
He's complaining. He's really challenging this MVP thing here today. I don't know.
No, I think
calling us out early, late.
I think when you describe a person as energetic, that pumped us up. That made us really. We've been.
I like to think so.
I'd like to think, out over our water skis as a result.
Alex, you complete us.
All right.
Molly, your take on Kyle Brandt earlier. I like to feel like I got you going.
Oh, thank you, buddy.
He's taking credit. Really... He's taking credit.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you did. You fired me up. I got a little too fired up. You know what fires me up? Is talking to Rod Comer. Love the man. Southside guy made good. We'll talk to the Coombe Dog next. Mully and Haw on the score.